Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and rumradio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. I would like to acknowledge WNAH, Boyd Carter, and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to the listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky and Arkansas, as a public service presentation. We would also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine, a finer recovery journal that affords some print space for us from time to time. I gratefully would like to introduce my co-host, Harold B., a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society, and as the family goes, so does the nation. Harold seems to be a little delinquent tonight. Harold sometimes is with families and can't seem to tear himself away. Sometimes that's just the way it is, and this is all voluntary work. And I'd like to acknowledge Harold's hard work and dedication to getting the message of 12-step recovery out and helping us at Rum Radio and me personally, Joseph G., in getting this work out. Well, this is Easter weekend in the Western world. Now, I know yesterday was Friday night, so that was Good Friday in the Christian tradition. And tomorrow is Easter Sunday. And I contemplated, well, what do we call Saturday? And I thought, you know, I would think back in Jerusalem that they would call this Rumor Saturday. Because there was rumors of rumors. Everyone knows that the only thing that travels faster than bad news is good gossip. Yesterday at my home group, the discussion, curiously, on Good Friday night was acceptance. And I got the opportunity to share, and I thought, you know, in the Christian ethic, acceptance came to me with about Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. And as the story and the legend goes in the Bible, the King James Bible, is that he asked God to take away this bitter cup, but not his will, but God's will be done. And sometimes that is probably, or most certainly, the most significant form of acceptance that I've ever heard. Greater love had no man than to sacrifice his love for another. Tonight we're going to be discussing the ninth tradition. Oh, before I get into that, let me give you the call-in number. If you'd like to call in, if you have any experience, strength, and hope, any comments, suggestions, please feel free. Especially with Harold not being here, it would be nice to hear someone other than my own voice. Although I can handle it, I'm quite enamored. The guest call-in number is 949-534-0621. Again, the guest call-in is 949-534-0621. On to Tradition 9. The short form reads, AA as such ought never to be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. Never be organized. So we're disorganized. I guess if you're not organized, you're disorganized. The long form reads, and it's a longer form, each AA group needs the least possible organization. Rotating leadership is the best. The small group may elect its secretary, the large group its rotating committee, and the groups of large metropolitan area their central or intergroup committee, which often employs a full-time secretary. The trustees of the General Service Board, that's the GSO in New York, are in effect our AA Service Committee, an AA General Service Committee. They are the custodians of our AA tradition and the receivers of voluntary AA contributions by which we maintain our AA by the groups to handle our overall public relations, and they guarantee the integrity of our principal newspaper, the AA Grapevine. All such representatives are to be guided in the spirit of service. For true leaders in AA are but trusted and experienced service of the whole. They derive no real authority from their titles. They do not govern. Universal respect is the key to their usefulness. When Tradition 9 was first written, it said that the Alcoholics Anonymous needs the least possible organization. In years since then, we have changed our minds about that. Today, we are able to say with assurance that Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, as a whole, should never be organized at all. Then, in seeming contradiction, we proceed to create special service boards and committees which in themselves are organized. How then can we, an unorganized movement, which can and does create a service organization for itself? Scanning this puzzler, people say, what do you mean, no organization? I have a quote I found to be interesting. Large organization is loose organization. Nay, it would be almost as true to say that organization is always disorganization. Gilbert K. Chesterton. Atheism is a non-profit organization, just as some organized religions are for profits only. That's mine. Tradition 2, where does AA get its direction? Who runs it? This too is a puzzler for every friend and newcomer. We are an unruly lot. Our only hope and direction had to come from a power greater than ourselves, as expressed in the collective personalities that constitute an informed group conscience. We had to defer to God. We would have to be humble enough to accept the will of God when and how he expressed himself for the good of the many would ultimately ensure the good as few as the one. Well, let's see. Did anyone ever hear of a nation, a church, a political party, even a benevolent association that had no membership rules? Did anyone ever hear of a society which couldn't somehow discipline its members and enforce obedience? Obedience to necessary rules and regulations. Doesn't nearly every society on earth give authority to some of its members to impose obedience upon the rest and to punish or expel offenders? Therefore, every nation, in fact, every form of society has to be a government administered by human beings. Power to direct or govern is the essence of organization everywhere. I'll repeat that. Power to direct or govern is the essence of organization everywhere. We seem to be missing that one, since we don't have it. It's a very useful thing to be unorganized, as it does away with indispensable and the disease of the petty tyrant. So no one is indispensable. And the petty tyrant, someone who takes on control beyond his ability. Usually, my experience with petty tyrants are usually people who are given just the smallest amount of authority, and it's the first time they've ever had that, and that petty tyrant is going to exercise that unrighteous dominion and the illusion of control to the utmost. thus ensuring his position. Excuse me. Power to direct, inspect, and hold accountable without status will follow a corrupted bread. It was like status will follow corrupted breadcrumb trail to prestige. That's what it's about. Prestige. The power to direct, inspect, and to hold accountable without status will follow a corrupted breadcrumb trail to prestige. The power to govern is everywhere except here. If the exception makes the rule, then the rule is we have no stinking rules. We don't need no stinking rules. And if we did have stinking rules, then we'd have to have stinking exceptions. Yet Alcoholics Anonymous is an exception. It does not conform to this pattern. Neither its General Service Conference, Letts's Foundation Board, nor the humblest group committee can issue a single directive to AA member and make it stick. Alone, mete out any punishment. We've tried it lots of times, but utter failure is always the result. Groups have tried to expel members, but the managed come back to sit in the meeting place saying, this is life for us, you can't keep us out. Committees have instructed many an AA to stop working on a chronic backslider, only to be told, how do I do my 12-step work in my business? How I do my 12-step work is my business. Who are you to judge? This doesn't mean an AA won't take advice or suggestions from more experienced members, but he surely won't take orders. Who is more unpopular than the old-timer AA full of wisdom who moves to another area and tries to tell the group there how to run its business? He and all like him who view with alarm the good of AA meet the most stubborn resistance or worse, still laughter. In tradition one, I think Harold made it. No, let's see. Harold, is that you?
That's me. Hello, Joseph. Hello, listeners.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I was in Clute, Texas, helping a little family improve the situation there, and so I've just returned home, and I'm glad that we're on the radio. See you on the radio.
I'm glad you're back. I introduced you and said that you were probably helping a family and that this was volunteer work. And then sometimes life gets in the way and that you'd be here if and when you could.
Yes, indeed.
We're doing Tradition 9 tonight.
Yes.
I introduced the idea that this is Easter weekend. We had a meeting at Lamplighters last night. It was on acceptance, and I chimed in about how I felt that the Jesus asking that this bitter cup be taken away, but it was God's will that he should take it. He would. And to me, that was sort of the ultimate acceptance. Harold?
Yes, absolutely. My effort is to be useful to God, and so I've been, when I'm driving on these long, hour-long returns home from distant cities, I like to listen to sermons and like to study the scriptures, and so... this is Easter weekend when we're all focusing on the death and resurrection of Christ. Very, very important to have a thorough understanding of all of that. So tradition 9, that we ought to never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees. Directly responsible to those they serve. This what amazes me about the 12 steps and about Bill W. and Dr. Bob and the work that they started, they arrived at the traditions and the steps through trial and error, and these are tried and true, proven in time and experience. They were not arrived at lightly. They weren't just made up, but they were, they arrived at something, they tried it, and then they improved it as needed. And then the traditions are, and the steps are laid down for us in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they really came out of the scriptures, and there are quite a few workbooks that outline which scriptures fit with which traditions, which steps fit with which scriptures, and that's an interesting study in itself. But for me, I owe my life to the program, to the steps, to the traditions, and to the people that helped me, to my sponsor, and also to my sponsees. So this is vitally important. I've received a lot, and I want to give back some. So where are we picking up the reading, Joseph?
Well, a little way down, it's around, I added tradition, a part of tradition one, and as a part of tradition two.
Okay.
See that? I like to throw some of the other traditions, how they bounce back against each other. My experience in AA is a lot of folks that I've run into, my experience is that really do not truly understand the intent of the traditions. What happens in my case particularly, there's a lot of clubs now, more than before, which are corporate entities. Like there's a Friends of Bill W. In different names like that, but they're corporations. And these corporations are not AA per se, but what they do is it's a legal entity that facilitates the ability of AA groups to meet. They provide rental space and bookkeeping and all that. And sometimes my experience is that these corporations feel that they are over and above the traditions because they're really not fully an AA entity per se. Harold, have you had that experience?
Well, yes, I've I was a member of a club in Portland called the Alano Club in Northwest Portland on 23rd, and it was a wonderful old house that was restored into meeting rooms, and it was I paid $10 a month and was a member of the club, and they provided space for AA meetings. They charged each meeting rent, and it was handled as a business. It was a non-profit business, but still, the club has its own board of advisors, I suppose some of whom are in recovery, some of whom are not, some of whom are normies. And there is a spot in the world for these clubs. I'm also a member of one now called Lamplighters, and they have a building and they rent the building to meetings. And so that's been going on for many years, and it seems to be a good fit. The groups, the AA groups are fully self-supporting through their own contributions, So it's a symbiotic relationship between the AA groups and the club. Also, Al-Anon groups. Al-Anon rent space at the Lamplighters Club a couple times a week, I understand, to help. So that's my experience. I enjoy being a member of the club and also attending AA meetings, and I have for 24 years plus. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. My experience is that I'm usually I suggest, but the club has no reason to take the suggestion, is that the club itself, with the board of directors, adopt the traditions as part of their agreement with the corporation. I think that's really important to keep that connection. Some do and some don't. And I believe when you don't do that, it's kind of like the individual having the illusion of control again. That somehow, some way, they're going to be able to stay in that position of control. And I think that's dangerous in AA and could hurt people. But, you know, it's not a perfect deal. We have really no organization, but the clubs represent organization. So I kind of shy away from that, but it's necessary. Matter of fact, there's a club right now, Primary Purpose in Houston, and because of a infraction from one of the members, he was inappropriate at the worst possible time, like those things usually happen. He flipped off the director of a place where was affording the group to meet. And the director was so taken back that she felt that his homophobia was causing a distress in the community and has asked the group to leave. And the point is they found a place but to rent, but the landlord wants them to be an entity, that they have to have a legal entity to sign the lease. So what's going to happen to Primary Purpose now is if they want to have a place to go, they're going to have to organize a 501(c) to become an entity. And I hope that works out well for them. I go there quite often. I like their recovery. But I'm always very skeptical sometimes about mixing the two. But sometimes it's the lesser of two evils, I believe. Harold?
Very interesting. I'm not sure how to respond to the idea of the AA group itself organizing and becoming a 501(c)(3). I'm not sure where. The 501(c)(3) standing is issued by and allowed by the Internal Revenue Service. It's a tax exemption based on the fact that an organization is either educational or religious. And so maybe that's not exactly the standing that they're seeking, but it takes a considerable length of time and quite a pile of paperwork to acquire a 501(c)(3) standing. You have to document, you have to propose what services you're offering the public, services that the government would have to provide, but instead you're providing those. And so based on the fact that you're saving the government money, in essence, then they will grant a 501(c)(3) status, and that's a tax exemption. You can then receive contributions, and those contributions are tax exempt. unless if you violate the agreement that you've made with the IRS in some way, like if someone in the organization writes a book and makes a ton of money off of that book, you've violated the agreement with the IRS. If you pile up a huge stack of money, a big savings, you've violated the IRS agreement. It's called an annulment, and in that case, they rescind the standing, the 501c3 tax exemption, and it's retroactive. So people have to refigure their tax statements all the way back to when they made the first contributions to that 501c3. They've got to refigure their taxes and pay tax on what was contributed, because it retroactively no longer a tax-exempt contribution. It's taxable. So everyone, it messes up everyone's taxes, and the organization itself can pay some whopping fines because they've violated an agreement, and they're no longer earning their status, and so they have to make up for that when their standing is rescinded. So it's very complex, and they're treading in territory that I would never touch with a 10-foot pole. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. I think I'm going to put you in touch with them.
Anyway, no thanks. They can hire their own attorney. I've been through acquiring a status, and then through some faulty planning. People that wouldn't listen to the attorneys, there was an annulment, and indeed everything was retroactively taken away. It was a gigantic mess. That's the last time I want to go through that. No, all of this, all they have to do is talk to the IRS. They'll tell them about it. They only issue a 501c3 because you're providing a service to the community that the government would have to otherwise provide. So take it from there.
Joseph?
Yes, Joseph.
Thank you, Harold. Tradition one, surely there's none which more jealously guards the individual's right to think, to talk, and act as he wishes. No AA can compel another to do anything. Nobody can be punished or expelled. Tradition two states, no board of directors, which is interesting, saying a board of directors, because an AA group doesn't have a board of directors. They have a group conscience. But tradition states...
Yes, they're just emphasizing the fact that there isn't a board of directors, but if any other board of directors wants to assert themselves, that's not allowed either.
Well, that's the way I took it. I really believe that when they said the no board of directors, it was sort of like, if you ever incorporate, well, you still can't cast any erring member into outer darkness. When needed, no AA can give another a directive and enforce obedience. So there's a lot of preponderance of information stating that we're free to act, think, and talk as we wish. Now, of course, now the bottom line is I could say whatever I want as long as I'm not hurting someone else. But if I don't put
I've been in meetings where people say things that do hurt someone else, and I know exactly how to handle a situation like that because I was taught by example many times by my sponsor, and it's quite simple. If someone comes into a meeting and begins to be abusive, either physically or verbally, or just comes into a meeting and they smell like alcohol, the thing to do is to stand up and take the person by the arm outside and have a one-on-one, a two-on-one conversation. My sponsor and I have done that on many occasions back over the past two decades, and I've done so with my sponsees. You take the person outside, talk to them, see what you can do to help them. Whenever there's an abusive situation, that person is actually asking for help. If someone comes across with some foul language, that's a call for help. If someone is threatening to become physical, if there's an assault of some kind, that's a call for help. It's like little children, and often we are like little children when we're in early recovery, sometimes in even in advanced recovery. It's not real solid recovery, but maybe the person is sober and they think that it's enough just to have stopped drinking, but they continue to be extremely selfish. Though they will act in ways that I call a call for help. So we need to answer that call. And I've taken many people outside. We have a conversation. We talk things over. It's really not advised to come drunk to an AA meeting. But as you've just said, people cannot be expelled. But we can work with them one-on-one outside the room so that their smell or their language will not be upsetting to somebody new in recovery. We have to take care of the people that are new in the rooms. And so we do that in pairs. We don't try to do things alone, but it's a we program. And so a couple of stable people will take the offender outside. We're not kicking them out of the group. We're working with them one-on-one. There are things that go on in meetings that are helpful to others in the meetings. Sometimes there are things that go on that aren't really helpful, and that's time to work on it one-on-one. You and I have talked about people who talk about things in the meetings that really should be talked about with their sponsor. And so knowing when to shift gears into a one-on-one mode is extremely valuable. We do it with love. You know, it could be us in the same situation. There but for the grace of God go I. So we're not in a position to judge, but we are to measure what's happening. And if we measure this and it's not really helpful to the new person, help it become a one-on-one situation, do it outside, and it's wonderfully helpful to the drunk, and it's helpful to the people in the rooms. And I've gained many times learning things about people and taking a look at what I was like when I was an idiot. We're sick, you know. We're a bunch of sick people, and we need to know how to handle the sickest of the sick. So I've heard stories about some of the meetings here in Texas where people are physical with each other. They use the F word. They're verbally abusive and so forth. And that sort of thing needs to be handled on a one-on-one basis. And instead of returning evil for evil, we need to pray for those that would hurt us. And anyway, Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. When a former sponsee has decided to attend Powerlessness University and give it the old college try one more time, I do my utmost to remain social and cordial and supportive, even when it's their decision to die. I suggest perhaps they're not an alcoholic, perhaps just a heavy drinker. And if they are truly an alcoholic, the first thought will be to argue that, in fact, they admit that they are an alcoholic, thus reaffirming the first step. I give suggestion rather. I never give directives. I try to be as loose as possible. People are going to do what they're going to do. The best way I can teach someone in the rooms of AA and to affirm the ninth tradition is by example. Of course, it's always good to, you know, to remember what the big book says. We share in a general way our experience, strength, and hope. Specific incidences should be discussed with your sponsor one-on-one. Anytime I hear someone discussing names and specific things that have happened to them that are kind of seamy sometimes and they go over the top, they haven't talked to their sponsor. The number one fear fear is speaking in public. More than death of the body, the death of a child, a divorce, a loss of a home, and even a loss of a job. At first blush, this seems unreasonable and petty until you consider that ridicule is death to the ego, and the ego will sacrifice the body on the altar of pride in a vain attempt to stay alive. The preacher said, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Of course, my greatest fear is no one's going to ask me to speak.
Yes. Well, I've noticed you've been quite patient, and you wait to be called on, and I can see the wisdom in your patience and your tolerance.
Thank you, Harold. Any new truth that has not met the test of time will first be met with ridicule and then with violent opposition, and when the violent opposition passes away, acceptance as being self-evident. You might think AA's headquarters in New York would be an exception. Surely the people there would have to have some authority, but long ago, trustees and staff members alike found that they could do more than make suggestions, and very mild ones at that. They even had to coin a couple of sentences which still go into half the letters they write. Of course, you are perfect liberty to handle this matter any way you please, but the majority experience in AA does not support. Now, that attitude is far removed from central government, isn't it? We recognize that alcoholics can't be dictated to individually or collectively. Reason obeys itself, and ignorance submits to whatever it's dictated to. Thomas Paine. We are always reasonable when we get to do it our way and are allowed to grow from the misadventure. Harold?
Yes. As I listened to you read that paragraph, you left out the word no when it says trustees and staff members alike found that they could do no more than suggestions. So for our archives, I'll set that one straight. It's they could do no more than make suggestions.
Oh, I forgot the word no. Yeah, that's in there. I missed that.
Yeah, it's in the print. So for you listeners who would like to, go to the website rumradio.org, look under Tradition 9. You can read along with us as you listen to this program. In fact, I go to the website. I copy all these paragraphs. I go to a Word page, paste it in there. Then I can look at it even if my internet goes down. So that's what I'm looking at now. Anyway, this is great. I really appreciate all the effort that Joseph has put into writing about the traditions, quoting the big book, making other observations and having it all fit together so well. I didn't get to say it at the opening of the program because I arrived late, but Joseph doesn't earn a penny from this website. In fact, it's cost him thousands of dollars to keep it up, but that's his way of giving back. And I'm here to also participate as my way of giving back to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 Steps. Alcoholics cannot be dictated to, and I think it's really wise of the New York organization, the headquarters, to say, of course, you are at perfect liberty to handle this matter any way you please. So they're just, you know, they're stating the obvious, but it's really useful there. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. I'm going to repeat the last quote. We are always reasonable when we get to do it our way and are allowed to grow from the misadventure. At this juncture, we can hear a churchman explain they are making disobedience a virtue. He is joined by a psychiatrist who says, defiant brats, they won't grow up and conform to the social usage. The man in the street says, I don't understand it. They must be nuts. But all these observers have overlooked something unique in Alcoholics Anonymous. Unless each AA member follows to the best of his ability our suggested 12 steps to recovery, he almost certainly signs his own death warrant. His drunkenness and disillusion are not penalties inflicted by people in authority. They result from his personal disobedience to spiritual principles. Wherever there is authority, there is a natural inclination to disobedience. Thomas Chandler Halliburton. AA is not a hotbed of mental health, and so sometimes we don't want anybody telling us what to do, not even God. God will wisely, firmly, and lovingly correct his children and bring them to their spiritual senses. The worst thing that could happen to any of us in such situations is for God not to chastise us and leave us to our own devices. Harold?
Yes, I was studying some scripture where God strives with man only so long, and then he will leave us to our own devices. And that's a very, very late stage of disobedience and inevitably ends in pain and destruction all the way back through all the scriptures. It's easy to see that. So we need to believe, and then we need to let it be seen that we believe in our behaviors, in our actions. If my pastor told me a little story one time that really brings all this into focus. If my father came to me and said, I have buried a gift for you over in that vacant lot over there, and it is an extremely valuable, large, perfect diamond. It's worth $3 million, and I've put it over there. It's my gift, and it's there for you. I love you. There's your gift. If I believe my father, I will go grab a shovel, and start to look and start to dig. But if I don't, I may do any number of things, but it won't be going and digging and looking. And so the same thing exists with our Heavenly Father. We've been given many gifts, many diamonds. And if once we believe that, we truly believe that, then we will go to the scriptures and we will dig and we will search and we will, it will be obvious in our actions that we believe that we've been given these gifts. But if we say, oh, that's nice, and we just go about our, you know, watching golf on TV, we don't really believe it. Our actions will reveal whether we believe or not. Works, faith without works is dead. It isn't really faith. Our works will show whether we believe or not. And so obedience to the steps and the spirit of the traditions and so forth is really what's at stake here. My recovery in those early days was depending on, will I go to any lengths to follow the suggestions and pick up the tools that the 12-step program is offering? Will I go to any lengths? Do I really believe? And I do, and I did, and I took the suggestions, and I continue to appreciate the 12 steps enough to come and give back. I really appreciate it. And at first I believed that it could work. I saw some people dying, and that put a new respect in me. And I saw people that recovered and really lived it, and that put some faith in me. And so all of that really added up to the fact that I believe that this system is a gift from God, and it really works if we work it. Joseph?
Was that a Joseph coming out there?
Yeah, that was a Joseph.
Oh, I didn't. Okay, it blurked out. Thank you, Harold. We are never so defenseless against suffering as when we love. Sigmund Freud. Out of suffering have emerged the strongest souls. The most massive characters are seared with scars. Cahil Gibran. When we accept what is happening to us at the present moment as part of a grander plan needed for our growth, we experience a new freedom and a new happiness. We welcome whatever comes into our lives, surrendering all wants and desires. With this new awareness comes contentment and peace. It is clear now that we ought to never name boards to govern us, but it's equally clear that we shall always need to authorize workers to serve us. It is the difference between the spirit of vested authority and the spirit of service. Two concepts which are sometimes poles apart. It is this: Association for the Area and the General Service Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous. Is that, did I miss it? In this, we elect the AA group.
Yeah, you missed line.
Yeah, I skipped the line. It is in this spirit of service that we elect the AA's group informal rotating committee, the Intergroup Association for the Area and the General Service Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous for AA as a whole. Even our foundation, once an independent board, is today directly accountable to our fellowship. Its trustees are the caretakers and expediters of our world services. Vested, not in a state of contingency or suspension, fixed as vested rights, vested interests. We have learned by sad experience that it's the nature and disposition of almost all men. As soon as they get a little authority, as they suppose, they will immediately begin to exercise unrighteous dominion and the illusion of control. No power or influence can or ought to be maintained by the prestige of a vested interest, only by service and by long suffering and by love unfeigned. Harold?
Yes, that's a very important look at what happens when people get a sense of authority. What is it? What is the saying? Power corrupts, and
absolutely, yeah.
And total. What's the rest of it?
Yeah, absolutely. Power corrupts absolutely.
Yes, and I've seen that work in organizations. In a nonprofit where I was involved serving, and the power corrupted. At one point in time, the leader that was beginning to abuse the power found out that the board had a secret meeting to discuss the ways the dollars were being spent, perhaps inappropriately, and the leader, finding out about that meeting, fired the entire board that very afternoon so that they couldn't have their meeting and hold the leader's feet to the fire. And things got worse from there. If the person had been willing to listen to the board, years of indictments, convictions, sentences, and so forth could have been avoided. But no, that's too easy. So it's important for people to speak up quickly. I think that's what I got from that whole situation, is that in our step 10, it says that when we're wrong, promptly admit it. I've really enjoyed the word promptly there, and that's a situation 3 years of pain and agony could have been avoided with a prompt admission. Oh, well, I can learn from that, and my recovery can be made stronger. When others suffer, and even when folks die, if we have an attitude of humility and teachability, we can use their misfortune to be part of our education. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. You know why they use the concept of promptly? It's because it's easier to eat crow while it's still warm.
Oh, gosh, that's an awful thought. A scavenger bird. All right, let's continue.
There are no big shots in AA, because if one shot, we're all shot. I should put forget his name, who comes up with that. I don't know if that's an old saying. Just as the aim of each
there are no,
AA...
There are no shots in AA, because if one takes a shot, we're all shot, huh?
Yeah.
If one is shot, if we take a shot, oh well. Go ahead, Joseph.
Just as the aim of each AA member is personal sobriety, the aim of our service is to bring sobriety within reach of all who want it. You notice they use the word want and not need. If
yes.
Nobody does the group chores, if the area's telephone rings go unanswered, if we do not reply to our mail, then AA as we know it would stop. Our communication lines with those who need our help would be broken. Some people regard discipline as a chore. For me, it's a kind of order that sets me free to fly. Julie Andrews. I heard in a meeting one time, alcohol gave me wings and then took away the sky.
Wow, that's great.
The world has need of willing men who has the worker's zeal. Come, help the good work move along. Put your heart, hand, and shoulder to our deal. AA has to function, but at the same time, it must avoid those dangers of great wealth, prestige, and entrenched power, which necessarily tempt other societies. Though Tradition 9, at first sight, seems to deal with purely practical matter, it is actual operation, it discloses a society without organization, animated only by the spirit of service, a true fellowship. Anonymity is our spiritual principle and our bulwark against the pitfalls of prestige and from the corruption of entrenched power. Money is the necessary evil, but we can only help if we pay as we go and accumulate no hoards of wealth. But when we're in the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? And when we're in that service and in that moment, are we not divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that service and in that moment, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA is action and more action, for faith without works is dead. Harold?
That is a wonderful reminder. We're coming down to the last 2 minutes here, or three, and four.
Yeah, we have Easter coming up, and I wanted to give you a little thing that I had come up with. I got from somewhere else. Behold, you are like you are little children, and you cannot bear all things now. You must grow in grace and in the knowledge of truth. For they cannot bear meat now, but milk they must receive. Wherefore they must not know these things, lest they perish. And that was written by Joseph Ben Joseph. Which means I go along, Bill W. said that AA was spiritual kindergarten, as often have observed to be true. Many do return to embrace the familiar God of their fathers with growth in time. As we begin to expand our spiritual experience, we grow in effectiveness. There is a spiritual axiom that nothing grows without opposition. It is also a physical law, most noticeable when gravity manifests itself in the free weight room at the gym. When we grow spiritually, we will be opposed spiritually by pinpricks or arrows flight, as we cannot grow spiritually and be comfortable, for the adversarial resistance will always insist on one more bite. I got a quick Easter joke. You ready for it?
Yes.
There was a man driving down a country road around this time of year, and he saw this huge rabbit jumping up and down and erratically, and he avoided the best he could to miss hitting the rabbit, but the rabbit jumped right in front of his car, and he hit the rabbit, and the rabbit went flying, and they had a basket with colored eggs and candy treats. The man pulled over and saw the dead rabbit and started to cry. A woman coming by saw this grown man crying and said, "Excuse me, sir, what's..." He says, "Look, lady, I think I killed the Easter bunny, and we're not going to have Easter as we know it." She says, "Well, maybe I can help." She went into the trunk of her car and got a spray can and sprayed the full contents of the can on the dead animal. Immediately, the rabbit jumped up, dusted himself off, and grabbed his basket and put all the contents of the candy and the colored eggs back in, jumped about 50 yards, turned around and waved, jumped another 50 yards, turned around and waved, jumped another 50 yards, turned around and waved. The man said, "This is miraculous." She said, "What's in the can?" And the lady turned around to show him that the label had said, "Hairspray, restores dead hair, gives permanent wave." Thanks, Harold.
That's cute. Thanks, Joseph. See you on the radio.
RumRadio.org. Have a good Easter.